Energy Office has extra copies of, and they thought some people in this room might appreciate some of that stuff. First order of business is the approval of the minutes. We have the minutes in front of us, and I don't know if y'all remember that we read them soon after the March meeting. We can approve them now, or we can, if y'all want to review them one more time, we can do it by email next week. Your choice. Anybody care? Do you want to approve them now or look at them? Okay. Everybody seen them? You remember looking at them? Okay.
I would move that we approve the minutes as written.
Okay, there's a motion. Good. All in favor? Aye.
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 Yay. Done. To catch you up on the GNAC activities for the last 3 months, the council was invited to go tour Barnwell, but unfortunately Claude was the only person who was available to tour, so I'm just going to ask Claude to give us a very brief synopsis.
I don't think okay. Well, it was enjoyable to me to go. I'd seen lots of pictures and had lots of briefings, but not a lot to see in buried waste. But they had some trenches open. You could see what they were doing. They were active. I think the thing I came away with, well, first of all, the people who work there have been there 30 and 40 years. I mean, they've been there a long, long time, and they don't have that many employees, but they all still appeared young to me. But the thing I saw, though, in the briefings and watching is that the place is nearly full. There's not much room left. And right now, there's no plans to do anything there to make it larger or to. There is some land back there, but nothing's on the track. So we got to think about what's going to happen down the road when it is full. And I doubt if New Jersey or Connecticut are going to open a low-level waste for everybody else for us to use. So something to keep in mind that when it fills, we've got to make some plans for what our plants that are building and figure out what we're going to do. But it's very enjoyable, and I think they're run by a very professional outfit.
Thank you, Claude. And thank you for going, representing us. The only other two things that I'm aware of is we sent two letters, one to DOE about the 3116 determination for H Tank Farm, and basically we said we reviewed the document. Basically, they're doing exactly what they did for F Tank Farm, incorporating the lessons learned from H Tank Farm. So our hope is that it will go smoother and more quickly than that. Most of the lessons learned have been learned, and there are H Tank Farm specific issues that I'm sure they'll have to deal with. But I'm hoping that we get that determination fairly quickly. The second letter, which I don't have, we can get copies of this letter, the board has copies, is a letter that we wrote to both South Carolina and Georgia congressional delegations, very concerned about the decrease in funding for the high-level waste programs, the Savannah River remediation operations part of the plant. We sent that a couple of weeks ago, and I know that most of the congressmen have read them. I don't know what they're going to do about it, but I think we'll have more discussions about that later on this afternoon. And either one of those letters I can get for you. Oh, they're on the website. You can get them yourself. So with that, let's start the meeting. We have a really varied, very interesting lineup today, starting with an NRC update on Fukushima, the Tier 1 report, which they just put out. So,
Madam Chairman, I just wanted to say that as far as I'm aware, our congressional delegation has been working very hard to make sure that at least the funds that we have available are moved around and we have that capability. And that has required an effort by people in the governor's office. And I appreciate that, that we're working as a team.
Yes, yes. Thank you for that, Vince, very much. Okay, NRC Fukushima update. John Pelchat, who's the regional governor liaison officer from Atlanta, for the NRC from Atlanta. Thank you, John.
Good afternoon. My name is John Pelchat. I'm the senior government liaison officer for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Region 2 office in Atlanta, Georgia. My pleasure to speak to you this afternoon and to update you on the changes that the NRC is requiring.
Thank you.
that the changes that the NRC is requiring at nuclear power plants, including those in South Carolina in the wake of the accident at the Fukushima Daiichi plant. As all of you are probably very familiar with, the 9.0 magnitude earthquake and the ensuing 45-foot tidal wave that brought about the accident at Fukushima. Within 2 weeks of the March 11, 2011 accident there, the NRC established a task force to review the events and to provide recommendations to further enhance safety at nuclear power plants located here in the United States. That near-term task force report, which I have a copy here, was published on July 12, 2011. Copies of this are available on our website as well. That report served as the basis for several regulatory actions that the NRC has taken and is continuing to take, and that's what I'm here to talk to you about today. These actions include the issuance of orders that required the development of strategies for mitigating extreme external events, for improvements in containment venting systems for boiling water reactors, and the installation of additional instrumentation and spent fuel pools. The NRC also issued requests for information asking that plants complete and document walkdowns of plant systems designed to cope with seismic and flooding events, and based on current data that these facilities reevaluate the external flooding and seismic hazards that might affect them. We also sent out an RFI asking them to describe the steps that would be taken to ensure that sufficient staff would be available on site during a multi-unit emergency and that communications were robust enough to withstand an extreme event. We've also begun rulemaking to formally establish requirements for coping with a station blackout for an indefinite period of time, integrating different types of emergency response procedures, and for consideration of filtering or confinement systems to better limit the releases of radioactive materials during extreme accident conditions. The first of the three orders deals with mitigation strategies and requires licensees to develop a three-phased approach to mitigate the effects of a beyond design basis accident, which might result in a prolonged loss of all off-site or alternating current power, also known as a station blackout. The strategies must address the need to maintain or restore cooling to the core, to maintain containment, and to maintain spent fuel pool cooling as well. The ultimate goal is to be able to cope with a station blackout for an indefinite period of time. The three phases are using locally currently installed equipment, to use portable equipment that is already stored on site, and three, to bring resources from off-site. The United States nuclear industry intends to meet the requirements of this order using what is called a diverse and flexible coping strategy, or a FLEX approach. As part of this initiative, each site is procuring additional equipment to meet the Phase 2 requirement of having portable on-site equipment. It is being procured to ensure that there is an N+1 quantity of portable pumps, hoses, generators, et cetera, where N is the number of units at each of the site. For example, a two-unit site would have three sets of the equipment. This recognizes that multi-unit events must be accounted for, which was previously never assumed. To meet the Phase 3 requirement to be capable of bringing in additional equipment and resources from off-site, the industry has established two regional support centers that they expect will be capable of mobilizing and transporting additional equipment within 24 hours to any site in the U.S. The two centers are to be located near Phoenix, Arizona, and Memphis, Tennessee. Each center will be redundant to the other, meaning that if one is destroyed by an external event, the other will be able to continue to supply any site in the United States. The second order requires boiling water reactor facilities to have reliable hardened vents. Now, for reference sake, there are no plants like this in South Carolina. The ability to vent is needed to control temperature and pressure in containment and can be critical to preventing fuel damage, particularly in a long-term station blackout event. This order requires that boiling water reactors with Mark I or Mark II containments have a reliable hardened vent that is able to remove decay heat and maintain control of containment pressure within acceptable limits following a beyond design basis accident that could result in either the loss of active containment heat removal or a station blackout. The hardened vent must be accessible and operable under a variety of conditions, including a prolonged station blackout and plant conditions that result from inadequate containment cooling. And I'm going to give you an update in a couple of slides on our more about vents and our recent orders on those issues.
You mentioned that there were no plants in South Carolina. Do you know where the closest one is?
The closest one is the Hatch plant in Baxley, Georgia.
Thank you.
All right. The only other two in the southeast are located, Brunswick. Sorry. I was thinking, I'm a Georgia boy. I think that direction. But no, you're absolutely right.
There are multiple directions.
But you're absolutely right. Brunswick is probably at Southport, North Carolina, is probably closer to closer to South Carolina. But Hatch is also relatively close. And the other one in the southeast is over in Alabama, Brantsbury.
Thank you.
Not a problem. The third of the three orders requires that licensees install reliable spent fuel pool instrumentation. During the events at Fukushima, a lack of information on the condition of the spent fuel pools led to a poor understanding of possible radiation releases, and this adversely impacted the ability to effectively prioritize what actions needed to be taken first in the emergency response by decision makers. In the future, having this type of instrumentation in the spent fuel pool would allow licensees to better prioritize the event response that they're carrying out, as well as make more better recommendations to off-site agencies as to protective action recommendations. All nuclear power plants are going to be required to have a reliable way of determining that the water level in their spent fuel pool is capable of is designed in such a way so that plant personnel will know that either that water levels inside the spent fuel pool are at normal levels, or that the level of water is still adequate to provide substantial radiation shielding for a person who is having to stand on the spent fuel pool operating deck, or at what point the level in the water is so close to the top of the spent fuel racks that action must be taken immediately to start adding makeup water to the pool. In addition to the three orders, the NRC has requested information from licensees to determine what, if additional regulatory actions are appropriate regarding protection against seismic and flooding hazards, and for enhanced communication and staffing during emergency prepare for emergencies. To collect this information, the NRC has issued a request for information pursuant to our regulation, which, contrary to what the name sounds like, does require licensees to provide us with the information so that we can make informed regulatory decisions regarding the safety of that plant. The first of the requests for information dealt with seismic and flooding issues, and licensees were requested to develop a methodology and acceptance criteria and perform walkdowns against the plant's current seismic and flooding design basis. Any performance deficiencies that are identified during these walkdowns were to be addressed by the licensee's corrective action program, which is overseen by our resident inspectors that are assigned to each of the plants. These walkdowns have already been completed, and the results of them were reported back to us in November of 2012, and we are now in our process of doing our evaluation of those results. Based on our initial review, we've identified several plants for follow-up audits by NRC, and those audits are to be completed by July 2013. Again, none of the plants that we've selected for follow-up audits are located in South Carolina. Next, licensees were asked to perform and provide results of a reevaluation of their seismic and flooding hazards based on current data that's available today, as opposed to the data that was available at the time that the facility was licensed and built, using present-day NRC requirements and guidance, and to identify whatever actions that might be needed to address any vulnerabilities that may be identified. The results will then be used to determine what additional regulatory actions that we may need to take, either in terms of developing new regulations or imposing additional orders. Finally, with regards to emergency preparedness, licensees were requested to provide us an assessment of their current communication systems and equipment used during an emergency to ensure that there was an ability to continue to communicate even in the face of a large-scale natural event. Licensees were also requested to provide us with an assessment of the staff that they needed to respond to a large-scale natural event and to implement strategies contained in the emergency plan, including consideration of conditions that could present an impediment for bringing in staff to address prolonged multi-unit events, including, again, station blackout. While we collect information in some areas, in other areas, the NRC has already begun the process of rulemaking to address a number of the lessons learned that came out of the Fukushima accident. The first of these rulemaking areas has to deal with station blackout mitigation strategies. We have the rule is based on the insights that have been gained from the implementation of the mitigation strategies order. As the licensees have implemented this, we've looked at these the implementation of the orders with both regional inspectors out of our regional offices, our headquarters inspection staff, as well as the resident inspectors who are at the plants every single day. And this rulemaking is going to incorporate the insights we got from that we've obtained from the implementation of the order. Where the rule is also going to address having the capability to make up water in the spent fuel pool. We now are looking at a we have published our draft regulatory basis, which is essentially the rationale for the rulemaking in the Federal Register. We published that back in April for a 45-day comment period, which just closed this past May 28th. We expect to publish our final regulatory basis this July, with a proposed rule being published in June of 2014, and a final rule going into effect in December of 2016. We have rulemaking ongoing for on-site emergency response capabilities. One of the findings of the near-term task force is that many of the emergency procedures that have been developed, especially the different classes of emergency procedures, such as emergency operating procedures, severe accident management guidelines, and extensive damage management guidelines, were not developed in a holistic fashion because they were developed and put into place at different times. And what we're seeking to do with this rulemaking is to integrate those all those different procedures to make sure that they work well even under the most challenging of circumstances. The final regulatory basis is expected to be published sometime this summer, probably in the July timeframe, with a proposed rule being published in the fourth quarter of 2014 and a final rule being published in the third quarter of 2016. I mentioned hardened vents just a moment ago. Past week, the Commission issued containment vent orders to boiling water reactors that superseded the previous order to ensure that the vents would have the ability to continue operating under the most extreme accident conditions. These accident conditions included the elevated temperatures, pressures, radiation levels, and combustible gas concentrations, such as hydrogen, that would be associated with an accident involving extensive core damage. In April, the Commission directed the staff to begin all additional rulemaking as well about other strategies for filtration or containment with a mind to publish a final regulatory basis or a rationale for a new rule sometime by March 2014 with a proposed final rule in March 2015 and a final rule in March of 2017. At a national level, we are, for the most part, if you look at this chart, in the implementation, the plant implementation, in terms of implementing the current orders. But what I'd like to do is give you a detailed summary of where we are in with regards to the plants in South Carolina. At Catawba, they are redoing the seismic and flooding reevaluations, and the results of that reevaluation is due to the NRC by March 2014. Implementation of all the orders, some of which requires work that needs to be done during an outage, for Unit 1 is going to be in fall of 2015, and for Unit 2 in spring of 2015. At Oconee, the seismic and flooding evaluations have already been submitted to the NRC. They came to us this past March. I did mention that we've already started our review of those packages. And implementation of all the orders is to be fully implemented for Unit 1 no later than fall of 2016, Unit 2 fall of 2015, and for Unit 3 the spring of 2016.
2016 or 2015?
For Unit 3, I have 2016, and I have a typo up there that I didn't fix. I fixed it in the notes, but not on the slide. I beg your pardon.
Okay.
No problem.
At Robinson, the seismic and flooding reevaluations are due to be provided to the NRC no later than March of 2014. With all orders being fully implemented by spring of 2015. At Summer, they provided us with their seismic and flooding reevaluations this past March, and we anticipate full implementation of all orders by fall of 2015. Additional information about what we're doing in this area can be found on our public website at www.nrc.gov. There on the front page, we have a spotlight section, and there's an area under that spotlight section called the Japan Lessons Learned, and you can go there to learn more about what I've talked about today and about more of the other kinds of work that we have going on. The authors of the Near-Term Task Force report dedicated their work to the people of Japan and especially to those who responded to the nuclear accident in Fukushima. In their report, Near-Term Task Force expressed the fervent hope that their hardships and losses would never have to be repeated, that being those of the Japanese people. The work of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and its staff, to that end, goes on. I'd like to thank you for your time and attention this afternoon, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Thank you very much, John. Questions?
John, do you still have NRC people over in Japan?
I don't think we do at this time, sir. I'd be happy to look into that and get
back. No, I was just a question. Have they started up any of their units again?
No, sir. Not to my knowledge.
Okay, thank you.
John, you want to cover the difference between rulemaking and an order and why you would have issued some orders and waited for rulemaking on other things?
An order is what it sort of sounds like. An order is effective within a certain number of days, sometimes effective immediately, and we say to deal with situations where there is a regulatory need or a safety need that must be addressed immediately and that has to be dealt with in a certain particular way, and they're very prescriptive in their nature about. We say you must do this and you must do that and you must achieve compliance at a certain date. Rulemaking is essentially developing regulations. And it's a fancy way of saying writing and putting into place regulations that essentially impose requirements just as strong or even stronger than an order. But what that does is it allows for a process of public review, public comment. It allows the NRC time to talk to everyone who has an interest in the issue and to gain their insights and perhaps learn about things that we may not have been aware of when we first approached the rulemaking issue, first drafted the proposed rule. We might learn things in the process, either about other technologies that might be applicable or other concerns that might be more significant than we may have initially assessed. So it's a learning and it's a give and take process. So we publish a draft rule, we give people and folks an opportunity to comment on it. And then we published a proposed final rule. There's an additional comment period. And then after that, we publish a final rule, and it becomes a regulation that is binding on all licensees. Does that answer your question, sir? Good. Anyone else?
Yes, I have a question about your fourth slide. When you're talking about mitigation for indefinite off-site power loss, give us an idea of what indefinite means. Is it 3 days, a week, a month, or is it really indefinite?
I think the intent is, at this point, it's indefinite. The station blackout rule right now, I believe, has a term of it on it. The current station blackout rule is 72 hours. The licensees have to have provisions to deal with a station blackout for up to 72 hours. the lessons from Fukushima suggest that that's not, that it could be a lot longer than that before offsite electrical power or other means to provide cooling, containment, and sufficient water to the spent fuel pool can be provided. So the idea, at least at this point, is as long as whatever it may take. That is my understanding of it.
And is there an approximate time that you're saying we want to see at least 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, or is it really in?
I don't know that. I don't know, but I'll ask the question and I'll get back to you. I'll get back to the board. I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
You've got information about spent fuel pool instrumentation, and there are spent fuel pools other than at reactor sites, and I was wondering what the relationship is between the information, you know, at the reactors and where the spent fuel pools
are. I'm talking about spent fuel pools that are holding fuel from commercial nuclear reactors.
I thought perhaps like at Morris, Illinois or someplace like that.
I don't have specific information on that facility. Again, I can talk to the right person on the staff and come back with a question. But these orders have been issued to licensees who are operating commercial nuclear power plants. So, or if they have some sort of fuel storage license. We do have a couple of facilities, for example, Crystal River, which is no longer operating, but does still have spent fuel in the pool, and I would imagine that this order will continue to apply to them as long as they have a license to store spent fuel in the pool until they either transport it off-site or put it in an independent spent fuel storage facility.
Thank you.
I just have a couple of questions. One is, I know we don't have any BWRs, but we have 4 new units going up over there and over there. I assume that the new units were considered in the walkdowns for flooding. Did the new units have to do anything for site? I mean, when you're looking at your site, you're
right.
Looking at all 4 of them. Do they have to do anything to the design or the construction of the new units to meet any of this?
Well, let's go back to the slides. Okay, I don't have information on where Vogtle is. Okay, which is the site just over the
it sits on the Savannah River.
Right, yeah. I know. I don't know, but I didn't.
You're a Georgia boy. You should know.
I know. You've busted me twice today. But the answer to the question is I don't know.
Okay.
I will find out, and I'll get that information. I'm happy to provide that information back. So far as Summer is, they do have the existing unit there, and I imagine that any of the insights that are gained from the seismic or flooding reevaluations will be considered for the new units at Summer.
Okay. Want anything?
Yeah, the initial walk down was to verify that you were built in accordance with your design basis. So we're still building the plant, so we're building them in accordance with the design basis. So that one didn't apply. The up-to-date seismic and flooding and external hazards information is up to date for the new unit, so there's no need to do that. We did get the order issued to us coincident with the license for the spent fuel pool, so that had to
That's
be
covered.
Evaluated.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Another question is, I don't know how to. I didn't hear risk informed in any of this discussion. So is there any analysis of cost versus benefit? And the analogy I can draw is, you know, license renewals, severe accident mitigation. Is there something like that in this process?
That component is not in the order process. It may be looked at in the order process, but it's not, there's not a formal component to it. But in rulemaking, that is a very definite aspect to that in rulemaking. As we get further into rulemaking, that's one of the things that we learn more about and that we use to help us in making the decisions that we make, is to find out what it is that it actually will cost to deploy these changes at various plants.
And I have one more question. This is probably not an appropriate question, but when you have public meetings, do you preface your discussion about these changes with some kind of a statement to reassure the public that these accidents are highly